So good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. This has been a busy weekend here. On Friday night, we had our wake-up, 20s and 30s, gathering, a meditation, and a Dharma discussion. Yesterday, we had a day of mindfulness. Last night, we had a concert, a fundraiser with Tim Ham for our new residential facility, Great Cloud Refuge. Today we have this. This coming week, Thursday, we begin a four-day retreat called Deconstructing the Myth of Self. So there's a lot going on, and I want to personally pay tribute to our community. All the people who do all the work. setting up these programs, setting up the facility, cleaning up afterwards, setting up another one. I mean, there's a lot of effort that goes on in this community, and we are fortunate to have so many people give so freely of their energies and their talents. So I really want to express my personal appreciation to these members of our community. What we usually do in January during the year, we have all different kinds of teachings on various aspects of the Buddha's teaching, as well as meditation and mindfulness, concentration, insight. But in January, it's very important that we always return to what in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition are called the five mindfulness trainings in Buddhism, right action. Because even though for many people in America, what draws us here is an interest in meditation, an interest in mindfulness, an interest in the various teachings, often the deeper teachings in the Buddhism, the psychology, the nature of mind, etc. If we really want to walk this path of transformation and awakening, it is important that we be also very attentive to our actions, the actions of our body, speech, and mind. Many of us, when we because of our past, we perhaps have been a little burnt on morality and ethics and things like that, so we have a little distaste for it. We want to just be able to practice meditation, practice the deeper teachings of Buddhism, and not have to attend to things like ethics and morality. Unfortunately, the actions of our body, speech, and mind are very inextricably linked with the condition of our life, the condition of our relationships, and therefore the condition of the world, our society. So I think it's very important that we never forget this area of right conduct. So it reminds me of a great phrase by great Indian teacher, Padmasambhava. He said, my view is vast as the sky, but in my actions, I am as attentive to them as a single grain of sand. So it's not either or, it's both and. And I know in these past weeks, for those of you who've been coming on Sundays, David Royal and Diane Powell have given talks on the five mindfulness trainings and ethics in relationship to the Buddhist path and the practice of them, the difference kind of a Buddhist ethics and the trainings versus traditional religious ethics and commandments. And I So I won't belabor those points, and hopefully you could hear them. I want to talk this morning about, I think, really the bigger area in which our conduct and our ethics, the actions of our body, speech, and mind, I think are, it's an intelligent way to look at them, is in terms of the Buddhist teachings on karma. Okay. And put you know, the ethical in that context. We're all here. We all are showing up in our life, and we are all different. We are all showing up in our lives differently. Why is that? You know, each of us, we are sitting here in this hall, we look different, we'll all get into our cars and we'll go back to our different lives, so to speak. And yet we're all here. I would imagine we're all here because there's something about mindfulness, there's something about meditation, there's something about the Buddhist teachings that is of interest to us because we want to change. There's something in our life that is not meeting at a deep level or even at a very functional level, our needs. For how we really want to be in this life and how we want to show up in this life and how we want to relate to others in this life. So it is very simple to kind of go, I need to get some practices to help me do that. You see, sort of like going to the doctor and saying, you know, give me some medication. I have this problem, just give me something to take. And oftentimes, you know, we unfortunately want our doctor to do that. But many of the conditions that ail us physically in this life have a lot to do with things like the way we live our life, the foods we eat or don't eat. Our level of exercise and activity, our mind state, our levels of stress. I mean, there are many things, our relationships, the quality of our relationships. So there are many things that are impacting our physical well-being that the doctor is not going to deal with. They're just going to give us the prescription. And so, again, I think there's a danger that we show up at places like the Florida Community Mindfulness looking for a medication, looking for something that we can take that will change us. And I think that does us a disservice and often leads to a kind of incomplete or an unbalanced spiritual life and path. There are many people who have been undertaking a meditative life, a spiritual life, for many years, if not decades, and yet their development is often unbalanced. Here they seem to be developing and maturing, and over here they're still functioning in a very immature, or even still have a lot of affliction in their life. And they often wonder why, since they are practicing meditation or mindfulness. So going back to the Buddha and all the great teachers have all stressed this necessity to have a grounding in right action and to really look at the causes that we are making through the actions of our body, speech, and mind in our life. Because they are really creating the basis for the happiness or the unhappiness, the well-being, the ease, the comfort, the suffering, the pain, the affliction of our life. Now, to do that, the Buddha taught karma. Everybody knows karma, I've heard the word. There's probably a rock group called karma. They're probably song's called Karma. But, you know, the Buddha taught in very much what's called, you know, the law of cause and effect, the law of dependent origination, which simply means that he did not look for the causes for the unfolding of way life unfolds, the individual, in causes and conditions that are necessarily outside oneself. Right? He did not believe in things like predestination. He did not believe in things like we are the playthings of the gods. Right? He really stressed that each of us is creating our own life through the actions of our body, speech, and mind. Is that clear? And he really was very clear that for everything effect that we see in the world, even from the smallest things, there had to be a cause. In other words, this is a kind of somewhat rational universe of cause and effect, right? And we need to understand that to get over our kind of looking at life in disbelief or looking at life with confusion, so we can really understand why things are operating the way they are. Why are they operating the way they are? Because of causes and conditions. Why is the world the way it is? Because of causes and conditions. Why is everybody in our life acting in the way they are? Because of causes and conditions. Right? So this is a very important, very empowering way of looking at life, to unfold the, quote, mystery of life and make it less mysterious. Now, when it came to individuals, he took the law of cause and effect and he called it karma, because there also is this very powerful piece of emotionality that is also very much what is driving the actions of human beings. So, karma. So, each of us has a life. Everybody know, so just for a moment, each of you just be individuals. We all have our life, right? We all have the things, the way we do with our bodies, the things we ingest, the things we eat, the things we touch, the things we do with our body, right? We have the speech, all the ways we speak and the things we say and the things we don't say, right? It's our speech. And most essentially, we have this mind of ours, right? Now, the actions of our body and the actions of our words can be seen by others, can't they? But this mind, our inner world, so to speak, of thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, etc., this is our own little private universe, isn't it? That nobody else sees. But it is very alive, right? Many people don't know how alive it is because they're just servants of their mind unconsciously. But when you begin to practice mindfulness and meditation and begin to watch your mind and observe your mind, you begin to see there's a lot going on in there, right? I would imagine many of you, even in the 30 minutes of meditation that we did, we're quite awestruck by how much is going on in there, even when nothing's going on. I mean, there's nothing going on in this room, is it? We're sitting in silence, right? Nothing is that. There's just absolutely nothing going on. And yet, did anybody notice your mind is still has a lot going on? Okay, so this mind of ours is endlessly generating thoughts and feelings and perceptions and stories, dramas, memories, right? Now, so this is the terrain that each of us live in. The question is, are we happy with it? Is this the way we want our mind to be? Is this the way we want our speech to be? Is this the way we want our actions in life to be? Is this the way we want to show up in life? Okay, now, we have to understand in Buddhist psychology, we are not the way we are because this is the way we are, you see? Like I'm a permanent solid thing called Fred and this is the way I am. Each of us is nothing more in terms of how we manifest, in terms of the actions of our body, speech, and mind, than our conditioning. We are the product of past causes. So if you wonder why you have the thoughts you do, the emotional life that you do, you speak the way you do, and you act the way you do, it's because of all the causes and conditions that you have existed in. I mean, you don't have to go back into past lifetimes, even just in this lifetime, since birth. Right? Now, most of us, that whole process of conditioning of cause and effect in our life, we have gone through fairly unconsciously. Right? We have not been the central arbiter of our development. In a certain way, we have been molded, some more, some less. Molded by our children, our families, molded by our schools, molded by our teacher, molded by our society, you know, molded by friends, molded by experiences and all the experiences we've had. Right? That has led us to this moment. Right? So when we take a look at ourselves, we're not seeing, in this case, my name is Fred, by the way. So I call this Fred. So when I look at that, I don't go, this is Fred. I go, Fred is a label for all of that. Most of which has been conditioned by past causes and conditions. And this is kind of a nutshell approach to an area that is fairly sophisticated. So, karma is what is this endless unfolding process that all of us are participating in. It's very open and fluid and responsive. We put out, people put back, we respond to situations, situations respond to us. It's a very fluid, interactive process. But basically, we are constantly being conditioned by it. Again, up to now, it has been a very unconscious product. We're just kind of stumbling around in the dark. The lights have not been on. We've done our best, right? Done our best to try to get a little happiness in life and to keep the suffering as low as we can do. Right? To understand karma and to understand karma as being actions, volitional actions that we undertake, we now can see if I want to change, if I want to be a better person, a happier person, a more caring person, or a more loving person, a more patient person, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Or even in Buddhism, if I want to be a Buddha, if I want to be an awakened human being, how do I do that? What is the process? And the process is about karma. Changing our karma. Changing the actions of our body, speech, and mind. In Buddhism, we say changing the actions, speech, and but the actions of our body, speech, and mind, from the actions of a deluded, suffering human being into the actions, the body, speech, and mind, of an enlightened one. Going from unwholesome to total wholesomeness. That is a process. Now, where do we begin in this process of transformation? central to the Buddhist path of transformation at a deeper level is the path of meditation, path of mindfulness, concentration, insight into the mind and the nature of mind. But that is a longer-term process. In terms of transformation, where you get the biggest bang for your buck early on is in relationship to the actions of your body and your speech. And if you think about the five mindfulness trainings that have been talked about this past week, that's what we're dealing with. How do we begin to, in our actions, how we act in the world, how we act to others, stop acting in ways that create harm. Harm for ourselves, harm for others. Because in the actions of our body speech, which are, you know, ultimately coming from the mind, we are creating our karma. We are creating the future. We are creating our life. And when we act unskillfully, and when we act in ways that do harm, it will come back to us. Anybody ever notice that? Sometimes it comes back to us immediately. Sometimes it doesn't come back for us for decades. But we are the product of our past, which means today and the actions we do today will one day be our past. So, with the five mindfulness trainings, the five precepts, we can immediately begin to not only stop doing actions that create affliction for ourselves and others, but more importantly, begin to create positive karma, right? That creates positive relations, positive interactions, a positive mind, a mind that is more wholesome, relationships that are more wholesome, will create a greater sense of well-being and ease within ourselves and hopefully those around us. A mind that is at ease, a mind that is filled with wholesome emotionality, when you come to the meditative cushion, it is much easier to calm and stabilize the mind. If we are still dealing with emotionality and a lot of drama and a lot of afflictive mind states, we will bring that to the cushion. Has anybody noticed that? Because the unfolding, essentially the unfolding of our karma is in our minds. That's why many people don't like to meditate. Because when you're really doing meditation in the way we do it, which is we're present to ourselves as we are, many people are not delighted in what they experience. Right. But yet, this is who we are. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book on mindfulness trainings, on Buddhist precepts, ethics, right action, he called it his book For a Future to be Possible. And here he was really talking about our world. Because if you see what's going on in the world and the way people are treating each other and governments are treating each other, it's really fundamentally, even though they make it about policy, they make it about diplomacy, it's really fundamentally, I would say, and that's where the discussion gets so off-base, it's really fundamentally about ethics. Right? It's funny, you know, there's been very, in these past months, all this comeuppance for a lot of these men who have abused power with women, right? And there's been a lot of, I mean, interesting karma. I mean, some has been recent and some of people are having to acknowledge things that happened decades ago. But it's the discussion is primarily framed in terms of power. Power over, which is certainly culturally true in our society. But no one's talking about sexuality. I mean, these are all actions having to do with sexuality. And in Buddhism, there is a precept about not doing harm with one's sexuality, right? That sexual expression is something that should always take place within the context of caring and should never be used just to satisfy one's own needs at the expense of others, right? You see, that's ethical behavior, which cuts across all situations. But it's interesting in our kind of postmodern culture that the discussion is not framed in terms of ethics, is it? And yet, I mean, look at all these guys getting their comeuppance in every area of life. And I'm sure, as all the women in here could attest, that's only the tip of the iceberg of what goes on, right? And yet, why does it go on? Because our society does not have an ethical way of approaching our conduct in terms of sexuality, for example. And, you know, whether it's also the use of intoxicants, you know, all these kinds of things that right action deals with, this way of understanding that there's a certain way of acting in the world and speaking in the world that supports wholesomeness in life. And if that is not practiced, we are left only with the alternative of doing unwholesome actions, creating harm, hurting. You know, the first precept is do not kill. Protect all life. In our society, we have endless ways of rationalizing aggression, killing, war, violence. It's just part of what? National policy. And there's no ethical discussion about life. You know, I'm a great believer in what's known as the golden rule. To me, how to act ethically in life, how to create good karma in one's life, in one's actions of body, speech, and mind, is really very easily understood. We don't have to take a course in ethics. You know, would I like anybody to do that to me? You see? Would I like somebody to kill my wife and child and call it collateral damage? Anybody here would like that? No. Would anybody here like to give somebody else the right to take their life when and if they want? And we would say what? No. I want to what? I want to protect my life. I want to protect the life of those around me, right? Oh, well, that's the first precept. How would we like people to talk to us? Dismissively? Unkindly? judgmentally, critically. No. We would love if everybody spoke to us in what way? With kindness, with understanding. You know, loving words. Understanding words. Well, of course we would like that. Oh, well, that's right speech. Is that clear? What we're dealing with? And this is how do we very quickly create a basis in our life for wholesomeness, which creates an ease and a well-being of mind. When we act unskillfully in any areas of these areas of our life, we know that we do not feel in harmony. We don't feel in harmony really with ourselves, and we certainly don't feel in harmony with those around us. Wholesome actions that care about, that take care of, those connect us in a positive way. They also, as we're doing those types of actions, having those kinds of thoughts, having those kinds of positive emotions, they are also perfuming our minds. So when we are moving our life in this positive, wholesome direction, it not only has to do with the one event or whatever we're doing, but it's creating a different framework within our mind that we might say perfumes the mind. So when other kinds of traditional negative thoughts or ways of acting or speaking begin to arise, they don't get supported within our mind. Right? Because we are changing. And the context of our minds are beginning to change. You know, there is one of the trainings is about the use of intoxicants, alcohol, drugs. And it's really about, well, everybody here probably knows it, that when one has used intoxicants, it often makes the mind a little cloudy, right? Now, when the mind's a little cloudy, people call that what? A buzz. They like that. But if you keep going, that little cloudiness becomes a little thicker. And when that thickness begins to cover the mind, all those kinds of behaviors, of ways of speaking and acting, with our body and with our speech, are often then what? They more easily come out. And we find ourselves often continually engaging in actions that are doing harm. Harm to ourselves, to our mind, to our well-being, to our future, positive future, as well as to others. So all these precepts and trainings that have to do with protecting life and not doing harm and not doing violent, not speaking violently, but speaking in a way that's supportive around sexuality and around intoxicants and, you know, not taking what belongs to others. Does anybody want somebody to take something of yours? No. But yet we take of others. I mean, sometimes it's a very deliberate, you know, that kind of stealing. But also, we take resources, don't we? We take wealth. We take all kinds of things in this life that we don't even think about, that create suffering. So, the undertaking of a life of right action in the actions of one body, speech, and mind is more easily understood when one understands karma, cause and effect, and that we are using the law of karma to transform ourselves. And again, while the practice of meditation and insight, developing meditative understanding, is more longer term in its both as a capacity we develop, as a competency to develop, as well as its capacity to really make a profound transformation in our minds, the easiest and most accessible thing that we can make immediate change in our life is in the areas of the behavior of our body and our speech. That is why the attention to our conduct is fundamental in the way the Buddha taught his path. So again, there may be people who are happy to hear that message today. There may be people who are not happy to hear that message today. Hey, I just came for mindfulness, or I just came for meditation. But I say it only because I think it's important to say. Because I think there's a context of our life in which our meditative life is unfolding. And we need to be attentive to all of us. Thich Nhat Hanh says we inter-are. One of our biggest delusions is we perceive ourselves as a separate self, separate from everything, stuck in our own identity. According to Buddhist psychology, that is a myth. That is a misperception. We inter-are. Right? We inter-are with our past, with our future, and with everything in life. Right now we are inter-are, right? You see, right now we're inter-aring. You might not have known that. We're inter-aring. You see, I'm talking, you're listening, I'm throwing things out, you're processing, you know what I mean? It's right now we're in flux. We're in process. Now, we can either live a life where we are very open and always in process and flux and transforming, or we can do the opposite, which is we can be stuck. We can be rigid. We can very radically identify, no, this is me, and this is what I believe, and this is the way I act. Right? You see, so we never change. We may wonder why, gee, I'm always exposing myself to opportunities to change. I'm going to meditation, I'm joining a spiritual community, I'm reading spiritual books, I'm having spiritual discussions, I'm listening to spiritual talks online. Why does it still sort of feel the same in there? Why do I still primarily act the way I've always acted? Because there's a kind of rigidity of mind which has to do with an identification with self that we're not even aware of because it seems so what? So normal, so natural. This is who I am, right? People say that all the time, but this is who I am. No. Actually, in Buddhism, you know what the Buddha said? We're all Buddhas. We're all enlightened beings. That is our true nature. But that's hard for us to say. We'd much rather say what? It's kind of a screwed up human being, you know. Just kind of trying to get through life with as few scratches as I can. Anyhow, I'd like to hear from you. Any comments, questions about this area of, and I know there have been talks in the past weeks, prior talks, on the trainings, on the precepts, but I think this is important, and I hope we can have an open discussion about this area of life, which I think is very important. Karma, actions, yes.
So, Fred, I really appreciate you talking about karma and causes and conditions because it's a place where I still get a little bit hooked. Mm-hmm. So I was just reflecting on how I almost can't even remember what my mind was like before I began meditation. Mm-hmm. And so there's been many transformative changes in mm-hmm. my life. But still, you know, I mess up. I make mistakes. I speak unskillfully. But where I'm still getting a little bit hooked, and feel free to say, Marie, you're still getting hooked, is I think there's a part of me that sort of says, well, if I do all of these things, why are other things still happening in my life? And so what happens when I come up against other people's causes and conditions and karma, and I lose my job, for example, because of, you know, situations that happen? So, and I can tell that there's just this little part of me that says, if I do everything right, this might be my conditioning, then everything will go Maria's way. And I know that's not true, but that's the hook for me. So,
Well, that's thank you. That's good. So everybody hear the question? So that's true in Disneyland, right? If you want a predictable positive experience, go to Disneyland, right? Everything will be right. Everything will be, you know, just the way you want it to be. Mickey will never age. Cinderella will always, you know, find her prince. You know, everything will be. But life is not like that. And, you know, karma, and as the Buddha taught it, you know, is not simple cause and effect. That's what we get hung up. It's myriad causes, right? Myriad causes. There are, each of us is the product of so many causes that we can't even begin to imagine, right? As well as you said, the Buddhist phrase actually is very important. It's not just causes, it's causes and conditions. So we are not just kind of islands unto ourselves just with our own causes. We're also living within situations. We're having experiences that involve lots of other variables, right? So we have to understand that this unfolding of our karma is taking place within a matrix, right? And as you just said, we are not in control of the matrix, which for many people is a very disturbing fact, right? And is a great source of our suffering. Because either we mistakenly believe that we are, so, you know, it's sort of like if I do this, this, and this, and this, then this will happen, right? Is that your experience, that life is that simple? No. Many variables, many complexities. But having said that, we have to find those areas where we can have the most positive effects, right, on our transformation, on our change, both for ourselves and the world. For example, I have a body. Now, I am not a scientist or a physician, but the little I know about the body is this is an incredible complex system, multiple systems, millions of parts, you know, mechanical, physical, biochemical, electrical, right? Is that clear? That's all I mean, even the fact that I'm up here making gestures and speaking is beyond my ability to understand. I mean, this body, right, is so incredibly complex. I can't change most of that way it's functioning, right? But what I can do with my body that I've been given care of is what? Take good care of it, right? You see? I know that, you know, by the nutrients I put into it and don't put into it, by the way I move it and exercise it, by the way I take care of the various organs of my body, right? And that I know also because of the body-mind connection, my mind state, that I can have a very positive effect on this body that essentially I don't understand because of its complexity, okay? And my body has its own physical karma. A lot of it has to do with what? My ancestors, right? So again, each of us has a body None of us picked it out. It was given to us. Who was it given to us by? Our ancestors. You know, this body is made up of all my ancestors. You know, you can go back as far as you want. It's a very complex thing. It has its own karma. You know, many of us, we have a certain kind of body and a certain kind of condition that we've inherited, and some of us have proclivities in a good way, some of us have proclivities toward illnesses and things like that, right? We have lots of stuff, right? That's the karma of our body. The question for each of us is what? What do I do with it? What do I do with it? Do I do harm to my body? Do I use it just to satisfy selfish needs? Or do I see this body as a vehicle of transformation, of relationship, right? So that's an example with our body of complexity. So in the same way of the complexity, Maria, of our karma, you know, we find those areas where we can affect transformation, you know. Why do you have the thoughts you have? Because of the past. I mean, there is no thought you have in your mind that is not conditioned from the past. If you want to study Buddhist psychology and the lie of the storehouse consciousness, you'll understand this whole process of why the impressions, the residue of everything we have thought and felt and acted upon in our life is within our storehouse consciousness. And it continues to bubble up. It continues to affect us. Right? That's our karma. That's where our karma is kind of held in our storehouse consciousness. But through the practices of mindfulness and meditation, we can learn how to be aware, and we can learn how to transform, and through the cultivation of wholesome, you know, we can learn to affect change. But it's not going to be overnight, right? I mean, bad things happen to good people, don't they? I mean, what happened to Jesus Christ? He seemed to be a fairly decent human being, as far as I could tell. What happened to him? What? He got killed. Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Do terrible things happen to basically fine, honorable people? Yeah. This world's a mess. All kinds of negative afflictions are running through the minds of human beings, and they act on them. We should not be surprised, you know, when it happens to us. Right? But this is the empowering thing of understanding karma and understanding our true nature of our Buddha nature, is that each of us have the capacity within the context of our individual karma and the causes and conditions of this world to chart a whole new path for ourselves. But it's not extraterrestrial, okay? We're not going to do it on some extraterrestrial plane. Many of us would like that. Sort of our own spiritual Disneyland where everything is good, right? Everybody is happy. People treat each other kindly, right? I mean, unless we're going to leave the world, we're going to do it in the context of the world as it is. We're going to do our transformation in the context of who we are right now. I mean, is that answering your question, Maria? Yeah. We have to be patient. That's why patience is important. And again, we understand karma. You know, again, you say you lost your job. I don't know. You know, we don't have to go into it, you know, but we're involved in institutions that also have their causing conditions. You know, we just might be wrong place, wrong time. I mean, who knows? I mean, that's, and I mean, that doesn't make us happy. It's not supposed to, oh, so what? Yeah, I lost my job. Wonderful. You know? So it's not like that, right? I mean, ooh, you know, that kind of hurts. But we don't get thrown by it. We don't make up a big story about it. We understand, yeah. causes and conditions. Any other questions? The kids are here today? Yeah. Yes. Can you hold on 1 second? You know, this is being live streamed, so they...
So one of the things that I struggled early in my teenager's time was with the idea of cause and effect, was that I was mistakenly making the equivalence of cause and effect with control.
Say that again. You were confusing what?
Cause and effect with control, uh-huh. Right? Because I was able to affect, right? And creating new conditions and, mm-hmm. and creating new causes in my life,
yes.
I was going to be able to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I got that.
So you learned about that one.
Yeah. In Spanish, we say that you grow up like a palm, but you go down like a coconut. So I'm recently finding out that I'm going again, falling down like a coconut.
Uh-huh.
And I have this discussion with Betsy last week. Because I was actively seeking to get pregnant. And I was finally pregnant. Uh-huh. But everything fell apart. I was feeling horrible. I was not in control of my body. I was not in control of my cravings. And I just hated. And I was mad at that. Because... why? I want this. I want to enjoy it. And I'm not able to enjoy it. And I came here. I was not even able to come back to the Sangha because I was just out of control. And when I came here and I tried to sit down, I couldn't. I have to go to the restroom. And I was feeling bad. And then here I'm sitting and I'm laughing at myself.
Good. Yeah, we are funny.
Because, I mean, it is like, yes, I am in charge of taking care of this body and taking care of this life in general. But this life is not in isolation of the realities of life, right? And we have been procreating for thousands of years. We have 7 billion people on there, and everyone is different, and for everyone is different, and this is our lives. And that's the reality of life, I guess. And I think that...
See, to Buddhism, it, like you said, it doesn't teach us how to control life, even though that's what we like. We would love it. You know, all of us, everybody in here, if they had the power to say, I would love to order this life just the way I want. So everything and everybody in it operates just the way I want. The truth is, we'd all take it if that was possible. But the truth is, it doesn't happen. So Buddhism doesn't teach us how to control life. It teaches us how to relate to life as it is, you see. So you said, yeah, I got pregnant. I wanted to get pregnant. And then I was sick. I was full of cravings, you know what I mean? I felt uncomfortable. I couldn't, you know, I was just a wild woman, right? So that's true, you see. But the suffering comes is, how did you relate to yourself in that way? Did you relate with understanding? Did you relate with compassion, with support? Or did you hate it? You're angry at it. You see, that's where the teachings help us. That's where mindfulness helps us. Not in controlling what we can't control, but relating to situations, including our own unfolding, in a healthy way, in a wise way, in a compassionate way, in a mindful way. In Buddhism, freedom doesn't mean that freedom means everything's going my way. Freedom means I'm not caught by anything. You see, we get caught. Our bodies are not acting the way we want. We make a drama about it. We're caught. We're fixating. We're stuck. rather than just, this is the way it's unfolding and let me just relate to it in a wise and intelligent way. It's because things are endlessly unfolding, right? Are you going to be pregnant forever? Oh, it's a time-limited event. Right? Hopefully, Right, and that's really everything is that way. Every word that I've spoken today, it's all gone. Every thought that anybody's had today, it's all gone. That's just the nature of reality. Things just arise and disappear. Right? Ideally, would we like it mostly to be good things that arise? Yeah, but it doesn't always happen that way, even if we're a great practitioner. If you read the life of the Buddha, he had to deal with some characters in his life. His own cousin, Devadatta, tried to kill him. He was jealous of him. That's just life. But it didn't throw him. He understood Devadatta. But he also didn't let him kill him. I think the kids are here. For those who are new, every other Sunday we have a children's program. And before we end, the children come in and they present to us what they've been doing while we've been in here doing these adult kind of behaviors like meditating and having Dharma talks. The children have been doing their thing. So are they here? I think so. They want to come in. So thank you.